Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we expect to have live coverage of a news conference by Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Patterson on the crane collapse on the Upper East Side, 91st and 1st, that has killed at least one person. Then we'll be talking to two of the participants in this fascinating panel that's going to take place as part of the World Science Festival tomorrow. They just mentioned it in that spot, what it means to be human. And we'll be talking to a cell biologist and a neuroethicist. So that's coming up. But right now, statistics that we've seen say that at least 40% of students in New York City's schools live in households where a language other than English is spoken, and that the students come from almost 200 countries. So how to educate in the context of such diversity of backgrounds and expectations is an ongoing concern. Whether 'tis nobler to celebrate that diversity or to aim for a common culture is the question. A new book from the Russell Sage Foundation, Just Schools, Pursuing Equality in Societies of Difference, explores these issues in detail. And we are joined by one of the book's co-editors, Martha Minow, a professor of law and senior lecturer at the Graduate School of Education at Harvard, and by an educator here in the field, in the city, Jillian Smith, principal of the Facing History Charter School in Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan. They will both be taking part in a day-long conference at NYU on Monday to explore the book's issues further. Welcome, Martha Minow and Jillian Smith.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning.
Professor Minow, in the book, you call this tension the equality/difference paradox, the equality-difference paradox. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. Ever since Brown v. Board of Education, I think people in this country have embraced equality as the ideal of schools, but we disagree about how much that involves recognizing differences among kids and how much instead does that call for treating every kid as if they were just the same. And when we come to the issues of language, of instruction, emphasis on assimilation, that's where that paradox really emerges. How much should we interpret equality as sameness and how much as difference? We find that teachers who attend to different identities and learning styles that are inflected by the students' families and cultures actually do better in diminishing the disparities in achievement, whether it's analyzed by race or ethnicity. And so that's kind of paradoxical, because rather than treating every kid as if they're just like every other kid, it actually may produce more comparable results to recognize kids and their differences.
And with the Supreme Court decisions limiting forced school integration and the proliferation of charter schools, which are all founded around some different concept, is the pendulum swinging away from equality towards difference?
Well, I think that's a very, very timely question. As you say, the growth of charter schools, but also magnet schools and pilot schools, and as well as vouchers for public dollars for private schools, all enable this proliferation of special mission schools, which can, and many are, organized around bilingual programs or ethnic cultural traditions. And that could produce some splintering or balkanization in America. And at the same time, many of these very schools have as their mission trying to produce better Americans who are also rooted in their own traditions.
Jillian Smith, Principal Smith, your school, your charter school, is organized by the foundation Facing History and Ourselves, that tries to use history as a guide for students today. Tell us about your school.
Well, first, my school is actually not a charter school.
It's
department. Yes, the Department of New York City Department of Education school.
Okay.
We are one of the small new schools created by New Vision with our lead partner, Facing History and Ourselves. Facing History and Ourselves and my school, we are attempting to create young people that actually understand that they need to be citizens of the world, and that actually that if you look at history and you really think about the moral decision-making of people and how we actually think about how we interact with each other and how we actually create community, that actually tells us who we are and how we want to live within the world.
Can you give me a concrete example from the curriculum?
So, for example, so we have three classes that all our students must take. The first class is a semester-long ninth-grade class, and it's called Holocaust and Human Behavior. And what we look at is using the lens of the Holocaust and using that lens on, so what are decisions that people made during that time that allowed this to happen, right? So the Holocaust didn't happen overnight. Any type of genocide or any type of
atrocity?
Yes, I'm sorry. Atrocities that happen, they don't happen overnight. People make decisions. Who are upstanders? Who are bystanders? So students, we use this curriculum, and students actually first start talking about identity. Who am I? Where do I fit into this world? If that was me, what would I do? And actually, what was the people, the other people that we usually don't talk about in the history books because they're their bigger concepts, we look at case studies to actually have students really identify what was going on during this time.
So this diversity uniformity paradox that Professor Minow is talking about, is that a line that you feel you have to walk?
Yes and no. I feel that we have to look at each student as individuals. We have to recognize that they bring something, right? They don't come in as a blank slate. They've been in school for many years. They have families. They come from different places. They bring something to us, and we have to acknowledge that. And what we, our job is to figure out how do we get what they, how do we use what they bring to us to A, allow them to grow, allow us to learn, allow them to identify themselves as learners and as people of tomorrow. And how do we then say, well, okay, this is great, but we also belong to this big world. And how do we come together to actually be a part of this big world together?
Yeah, so Professor Minow, maybe Principal Smith just really articulated the contemporary solution to this age-old paradox, or at least decades-old paradox. When you talk about the equality difference paradox, it makes it sound like an either-or thing. And maybe there was a time in the 80s or the 90s when people were debating it like it was an either-or thing. Maybe now it's about integrating the two ideas, as I think Principal Smith just put very well.
Well, I think the Facing History School does a brilliant job in connecting the curriculum to the students' own identities and vice versa. But the paradox persists. So one of the chapters in our books explores the reception of Somali immigrants in the public schools in Lewiston, Maine, which is often described as the whitest state in the nation. Turns out the Somali immigrants are not viewed particularly in racial terms, but in religious terms. They've had clashes over the dress code, over gym classes, over even the curriculum. And figuring out when is there an accommodation that is fair and when is that special treatment continues to be a problem there. Similarly, we have another chapter that looks at a private school called the Universal School outside of Chicago. It's an Islamic school which uses character counts, a secular character education program, to try to demonstrate that Islam is compatible with America. So there are many versions of an integration or convergence, as you're describing it, but it's very different than just treating every student as if they are identical with every other student.
Do you have any more thoughts on how religion, which you just mentioned, plays into this? Because obviously parochial schools go their own way, but maybe you know about the uproar here in New York over the Arabic culture, dual language public school in Brooklyn.
Sure, the Khalil
Gibran Academy.
Unfortunately, I think that there is a wonderful example about how there is a public fear of difference that persists in the school, and it makes the difficulties of recognizing students' differences continue. I mean, a principal was fired for comments that she made trying to explain a term. And the term, as she explained it, was accurate. The media distorted the discussion, but it showed kind of panic that the public schools might be supporting a school that is bilingual Arabic English instruction. Interestingly, that school has over 50% students who are not coming from homes that are Arabic language schools. Language homes, I'm sorry.
Right.
And it certainly would be helpful at this moment in the world to have more Americans who are fluent in Arabic, it would seem to me. But
what would be really funny is after all the uproar over that school, if, you know, 15 years from now and the kids grow up and graduate and they learn Arabic along the way, half of them wind up working for the CIA.
No question about it. At the same time, there are Arabic language schools, charter schools, public schools in other parts of the country where 90%+ of the students are coming from homes that are Arabic language. And they may raise a different question about how successfully are those schools integrating the students into a mainstream culture.
I'll tell you what, we just have a few minutes left, but I wonder if any educators listening right now, any teachers on your prep period, anyone homesick or retired educators want to call in real quick, because we just have a few minutes, and talk about walking this line of the equality difference paradox in contemporary education. 212-433-WNYC, but get it in right away, 433-9692. Professor Smith, how big is your school and what's the population like?
We currently have 306 students. We have about 60% Latino students, 39% African-American students, and 1% other. Most of our students come from Upper Manhattan. We're in our third year. Next year will be our first graduating class.
Congratulations.
And most of our students come from Upper Manhattan, but now we're beginning to see students coming from all the other boroughs.
And with a 60-40 split like that, you have a lot of diversity among those two broad groups, and even those groups are broad, black, and I imagine you have some African students and
yes.
some African-American students
yes.
and various Latinos. And so when your theme is facing history, facing ourselves, what history do they face? Do they face the history of the Dominican Republic? Do they face the history of, the slave trade? How do you, because you can't do everything.
Right, we can't. So what we actually try to do is we always begin with self. And as we begin with self, which is the identity of the person, then we do study something that's core. So whether it's Holocaust and the human behavior, whether it's the Crusade, whether it's whether it's the slave trade, and then actually stepping back and bringing it to the now. So how does this affect your community now? How does this affect where you are from? How does this affect your parents? So what have you learned in the past that now we're actually in the present, right, and really engaging these students that have diverse backgrounds in these discussions around race and prejudice and anti-Semitism, but bringing it to the now so they can really understand that.
Carly in Westfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carly.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Right to the point. We've got about 30 seconds for you.
Sure. I was just calling with a little historical perspective. I did my undergraduate thesis at Yale on the question of assimilation and equality among immigrants at the turn of the century, the 20th century. And they're asking a lot of the same questions. But the solution that was generally accepted then was that students should be assimilated. They should be Americans. But instead of finding difference in how you teach each student, there was difference in what you were training them to become. So, a lot of the institutions we have in schools now, like gym class, school nurses, those were all intended originally almost as tools of assimilation.
Tools of assimilation. Do you agree with that? Well, Professor Minow, do you agree with that history? And then Principal Smith, do you see what you do in your school as at all a tool of assimilation, or is that a dirty word? And actually, Principal Smith, you first.
I don't think we're asking the students to assimilate. I think we are asking them to find their way to make a richer society. I think, yes, there are things in life that we would say, okay, well, this works for this person, right? So this type of, personality person is going to do this. But I think what we're really trying to tell the students is, well, how do you find out what is your personality? And it's not about assimilation. It isn't. It's really about finding who you are, but we do belong to a bigger world. We cannot ignore that. We cannot just have the students, they have to be themselves, but then they have to go into the bigger world.
That's another way, and we have 30 seconds left, Professor Minow, to describe the tension, right? The assimilation, cultural heritage tension.
The parallels to the past are striking in terms of the rate of immigrant presence, but the aspiration now, I think, is to reach globally as more and more individuals in this country have ties in the past and in the future to other countries. And at the same time, I think there's a rejection of the old model that's very class-based, sorting students into different careers and vocations.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, there's really a goal of unlocking the potential of every student, making sure that every student has real access to opportunities in this ever-changing world.
Martha Minow, Harvard education professor, has written Just Schools, Pursuing Equality in Societies of Difference. Jillian Smith is principal of the Facing History School in Manhattan. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.